information collection process, what I call collect, process, displayed, evaluated, disseminate. It was all just based on human intervention there.
Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7-figure exit, and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Do you want to grow your business bigger and faster? A free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find missed golden opportunities. I generally charge $150 or more per hour, but this would be free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing a few thousand dollars a month in sales already. Just visit myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit, and book in a time. That's myamazonaudit.com. Look forward to speaking to you on your audit. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. And that's for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. Today, we've got something quite different, quite exciting. So Dr. Simmons is with us. He is a retired Navy captain with a 28-year career as a surface warfare officer. And he's done all kinds of things, including strategic planning at the Pentagon. And he's also contributed to the Small Business Innovation Research. So he now specializes in leadership performance at Sixth Gear Consulting. So quite a different guest, but I thought there's nothing like a Navy person to talk about leadership. So welcome to the show, Dr. Simmons. Great to have you with us.
Good, Michael. Thanks for having me. Such an honor.
My pleasure. And no, honor is mine. I mean, a retired naval captain, very different from what we traditionally have, although Britain traditionally is full of retired naval captains, but I've never actually met one, amazingly, so we haven't got many around these days. So just in a nutshell, so I've given a brief background about you. We're going to talk today about data overwhelm and then also how to deal with it, which is a problem all entrepreneurs face, but particularly those in the digital realm. So I think that's a very relevant skill and an area. What's your experience with data and data overwhelm in your world?
Well, actually, I've been on both sides of it as a user, as a Navy captain. And also, we like to send our warfighters up to the Pentagon when we go ashore to see the other side of the Navy and to help inform the fleet for its building new capabilities. And who better to do that than the ones who's been out there, you know, operating, doing the equipment or the assets. So I had opportunity as a user fighting ships as a combat information center officer. So the word information center says itself, you know, and that's just a matter of having data porters or what they call warehouses nowadays while collecting, processing, evaluating, and displaying and disseminate information. And on the other side, once I became a senior officer, I had opportunity to go and work at the Pentagon on the acquisition sector, acquisition branch, or I did a lot of assessments there. Capability development between the joint staff and the Navy staff there, where I was responsible for building new capabilities in air warfare, dealing with the drones and having changed the algorithms so we can actually see targets.
So, wow. Okay. So some very impressive stuff. So obviously you guys have American military, I guess, is infamous for having some pretty hefty jargon that we have to unpick. So you mentioned portals and warehouses. Is that basically a sort of place where the information is gathered? Is that a...
Yeah, that's pretty much newspeak of today in the AI world. Data warehouse, and that comes from my actually academia there when I was on my doctoral program and also working as a contractor in the civilian sector when I was doing what called data collection analysis plans. And these warehouses are assembly of their quarters. They all one in the same. But they bring out a big data. So what's big data? Big data is what we collect with all these tons of sensors and information storage banks. So it wasn't until we came up with these warehouses that we stored this information and we could take it and convert it from the warehouse into metadata. And that's usable data. But that was still overwhelming because we had so much information coming into the metadata. So the metadata became so large until we had advanced software tools that involved algorithms and was able to take that metadata from these warehouses and get it more organized and make it more usable and put it at the fingertips of the warfighter or the user on the business side.
Right. Wow. Okay. That kind of makes sense. I guess you got the raw data, you got the data based on that data. It was still not human usable. Then you had algorithms and eventually became usable. And that whole big lot of data was kept in obviously a virtual form of data warehouse, I guess you're saying. So yeah. But let's plunge into the problem. So you've outlined in our discussions to prepare for this, two big problems, human saturation and decision paralysis. So let's plunge into the problems first and make sure we understand the problems before we start giving people solutions. So tell us about human saturation.
Yeah, human saturation is a common problem. I really like this one. And despite having worked as an analyst on the civilian sector and providing assets to the customer, I date back to I was a combat information center officer in 1993 in the USS Manitowoc. And that's when I came up with this information collection process, what I call collect, process, display, evaluate, and disseminate. It was all just based on human intervention there. Okay. So then we got fast forward, we came here with advanced ships that had just tons of upgraded systems. And this fast forward into 2002-03 timeframe. And I was in one of the easiest destroyers and where we had just tons of information that would come in to the point where it became overwhelming. So to the point where the operator of the equipment didn't have the capacity to apply all the information that's available. So that became a warfighter or user saturation. So we have to sector or streamline what equipment was used. We pull different libraries that were associated with different goals and objectives we had. Similar to what we're doing now, in the civilian sector. So without having that goals and objectives and looking for certain answers and being aware of what we wanted to get after, the information would just saturate the human being. And so you're to the point where it render him useless, regardless of just having too much information. I also look at a similar situation. Human saturation was take 9/11. We had tons of information available, but it was the application of that information that became our Achilles heels. So we had to determine how to streamline that information, determine what was applicable for certain situations and conditions. So it become what we call data intelligence versus data illusion.
Okay. Data illusion versus data intelligence or data, as I suppose I would say. Okay. Now, you've mentioned, obviously, there's a lot of data that is basically not helpful. I guess you call it superfluous data, as you call it in our notes here. So how do you go about filtering that out? That's really hard. You mentioned goals and objectives. I presume that has a lot to do with it.
Yes. And that's where you get back into the tools, into the software, into the algorithms. And once you determine your goals, essentially, you say you have IT support. Let's just break it down into layman terms. If I call an IT company in to provide services, I have a certain area of emphasis that I want them to work on. They know that's going to be more important than me calling them, asking for a service. He's going to tell me all the greatness that he can offer. And he's going to, just take more interest in flexing his muscles and his capabilities and giving me a product that will solve world hunger for the most part, every problem possible. I don't need every problem possible solved. So this one, I go into my data collection analysis plan. So this started on the end of this entire data process when I have to define my objectives and look at these goals and determine what I get after. Say, for instance, I don't go grocery shopping unless I know what I'm going to cook. Otherwise, I may go into the grocery store. I'm just overwhelmed. There's so many nice products in here. I'm just going to just aimlessly pick up products that I like. And I'm going to bring it home and then decide what I'm going to cook. So similar, determine how to apply this data. You got to understand you have these tools that you're going to put inside of these warehouses. And you got to organize that information is in those warehouses so you can know exactly what you go after. So when you apply those algorithms that they really make sense and getting after the problem, then it's one other key piece to that. You got to have human intervention. So I have to look at, I'm doing analytics, but I have to also have my strategists and my analysts in the same space so I can do iterative process and determine, drilling down to the particular data, but it starts with having a goal in mind.
Yeah, it's funny that you should say that about grocery shopping without knowing what you want to cook. I don't like shopping, so I only shop when I have to, and I shop when I'm going to cook something. My wife buys stuff because it looks good, and then she brings it home. We have the exact problem you have. We have an overfull fridge and freezer. Hopefully, she'll not listen to this because there's no reason why she listens to any Commonwealth podcast. She's a musician, but exactly that thing happens. We have an overfull fridge. We end up not knowing what's in there, and then we end up cooking random stuff based on what she's bought. So yeah, that's kind of, by the way, that does feel a lot like how a lot of people run their businesses. They're kind of reacting to the data. So tell us a bit more about how goal setting, I mean, obviously, you know, goal setting is important, and that's a whole subject in itself, which we've covered elsewhere. But how does goal setting in the context of this much data, how does that change goal setting for you? Or what's your advice about goal setting within an environment where we have crazy amounts of data?
That's just a perfect question. That goes back to who I am as a, in my background and experience. You know, when you have goals, okay, I look at my, what I call operational design. We got means and ways, okay? And inside of that design framework, we have assumptions and risks. So myself as a warfighter, I'm working now in the Small Business Innovation Research for the Office of Navy Research. I bring forward my military back understanding, you know, from a user perspective, what it is I'm trying to get after out here in the battlefield. Or from a business perspective, you know, what problem I want to solve in the dynamic work environment that we are facing today. And as I mentioned earlier, we in an environment that's so dynamic in the, what we call, I call it buckle conditions, which is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So given those landscapes, I talk about your strategist and your analyst. And this whole goal thing has to do with your strategist. Hey, what does he want to get after? And how do you communicate that to your analyst? And so within that construct, we have to determine these goals at the end that I want to get toward. So, and that's based on experience. And within that experience, identifying those ends, you go into the inside of these ways, and then you got your means. Your means is just almost infinite nowadays, you know, with the big data and all the, you know, the pools of information we have available. So that takes us inside of the ways. So how do I get from having all these means to get to this one particular goal? I got to have some assumptions in here. I got to take some risks. But the more experience I have, the better my assumptions. And that's when we'll bring experts into the room and our data collection analysis plan and determine what is important to test, to measure in order to reach this particular end state. And I had that experience when I was also working on the capability development division in the gun, where we'll go out and talk with the guys that was in the field and see exactly what is it that we wanted to achieve. So we put the right information out there so the software will spit, you know, us give them the right input so they can spit the right information out to get out the particular issues, but even before we tuck it into the lab for the analysts.
Wow, there's a lot to take on board here. But I mean, one or two obvious questions might be, which is, I mean, it's often the case that people use war as a sort of metaphor for business. And they talk about, you know, beating the competition or explosive growth. And, you know, I suppose it's not quite a war metaphor, but quite a few are, you know, competition even in itself is like almost a war metaphor. So what, I don't know if it's going to be helpful or not, but let's just test the waters here. What kind of objectives would you have in a military situation that you found are usable, you can port over some of the thinking and strategies to small business? So I presume like winning a war is an idea, but I mean, what, you know, let's keep it very, very simple. Give me some simple ideas.
I will tell you this. I keep it at the keep it sanitized per se, you know, so I won't get into any disclosure of any kind of military proprietary information. At the end of the day, you want to have the competitive edges. Everything costs money. And technology continues to advance. So you got to always try to outpace your competitors. So the military is similar to another small business. You have to see what it is they're doing, what techniques, what tools they're using. And you have to ensure that your processes that you have in place that are going to arrive you at those more friendly or cost effective, more efficient, you know, means of doing business. So your goals is really at times, you know, you can be cost saving, getting information. At the end of the day, you want to get information to the decision maker, you know, in the most expeditious manner as possible with the most accurate information. So sometimes your goal is as simple as, hey, what can I do in order to go into a particular environment is going to give me a fighting edge by getting valuable information to my warfighter in the most timely manner. So that's big picture, you know, we'll eventually equate to winning the war, as you mentioned, the macro goal.
Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit, and book in a time, and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you on a call soon. Yeah, interesting. So I guess, you know, the competitive edge, well, people talk about an arms race, for example. So if I'm, you know, creating, for example, content marketing for my small business manually, and then somebody else is using some, I was going to say deep fake software, I guess that is really what it is. I can't think of the names of the proprietary ones right now, but there's some things where you can create like 50 versions of yourself in 2 minute snippets and put it out. Well, I guess it's a bit like using drones versus using human pilots, right? If you got 100 drones versus one human pilot, you know, you probably need to consider using drones yourself, right? I mean, is that the kind of way you're thinking about it?
As you know, you asked that question. Yes, I was listening to Elon Musk's book that he was talking about the assembly line when he was in his Tesla company. And so you look at these capabilities, and you mentioned the manned aircraft versus the unmanned aircraft. Now, we talked about unmanned aircraft for years now, you know, exceeding, you know, 10, 15 years. And we still have to be very selective. How do we go about missions? And a lot of this comes from doing data analytics. Do we stick with the unmanned aircraft? Or do we go with the manned? How much, similar to AI, you know, doing applications in HR, you know, business there, you know, that could be the downside to artificial intelligence. Sometimes it's not properly predicted. So sometimes we need to make changes so abruptly, so frequently that we can't afford, you know, not to have, you know, direct human intervention, the wisdom, you know, of the human. So Musk's example was, you know, I studied robotics in college too, which I thought was great. You know, it was way back in 1986 through 89. And it's supposed to replace it, you know, dirty, dull, and dangerous. So when I hear people talk robots and automation, I get, you know, pretty excited. But back to the point, Musk was talking about automation and how we underestimate human being. And when we build these assembly lines, we want to go put the automated per se. And you realize, well, it's as simple as putting maybe a piece of rubber, you know, in the windlass. It's just too simple. It's more convenient. It makes more sense to do it with the human being, you know, than with a robot, you know. And I said, but he will go robots first. And he tested it that way. So like reverse engineering the problem. But that just must have in doing businesses. Most companies start with the manual process and then maybe evolve into the automated process. But it really, you can use analytics as you do design to determine what makes sense, you know, from a perspective or from a drone or manned aircraft perspective. And that's one of the unique features we have in the artificial intelligence world. But some businesses do an overkill with AI, and you spend more time doing rework, you know, just because you put too much emphasis and too much stock and you felt compelled to use AI. Once again, like you did IT service. You order all the services, you know, tell people what you want. You end up with, you know, a piece of equipment that probably only using 10% of it. They're going to buy it when you have a large invoice. They're going to provide you whatever service they feel comfortable with. They're going to show you how they're at IT support, you know, by getting after the problem that you experience. I think all this stuff ties together.
Interesting. I mean, I've got a couple of thoughts about what you were saying. I mean, it's interesting you studied robotics. So you actually have a really pretty profound understanding compared to most people of Elon Musk's use of robots or use of humans. And I think I see that a lot in businesses that people fall in love with the idea of automation again and again. I've been there myself. And then you come back to it and you realize that actually it's the human component, particularly in marketing or product design. That, you know, marketing is designed to be consumed by humans, right? It's no good if it's consumed by robots. It won't make you any money because robots don't spend money, as far as I know. Not yet, anyway. And then they don't work as personal shoppers for us yet. And then also, if you're getting a designer a product, is going to be used by a human. Otherwise, it won't get paid for. So I guess that actually we can fall into that trap very easily. And it's so interesting that you said that about Elon Musk. I haven't read that book, but I mean, it makes sense. He's such a clear thinker. And that reminds me also of a business partner I had who's very good at programming. But he said, Mike, a lot of the time, I'll start with the process. I'll get humans to do it. You say, if you want cheap labor, then somebody in a developing country, where it's affordable labor, like the Philippines or something. And then I'm only going to hardwire it once we've really nailed the process and I know that it's, you know, fairly predictable. Is that the kind of thinking you're talking about? Or is it, am I missing the point?
No, you're spot on. You have that context there. I mean, as I was preparing, you know, for our discussion here, and I had opportunity to go look over some of my notes and some of my background and some of the things I've done, just to try to be, you know, as informed as possible. And you have to look, I talk a lot to data analytics and all the processes and fielding equipment, but you have to look into the era we're in now, this artificial intelligence and ChatGPT. That really stemmed from the warehouses and the metadata, you know, putting those tools in place, you know, to create its usable metadata. Metadata first been usable within itself, but it became overwhelming. As I talked about the human being humanly saturated there. So once we put these algorithms in place inside of these software, advanced software tools to turn this metadata into something that could address particular goals, we begin to realize that, gosh, man, AI is just so powerful. It can take us anywhere we want to go. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't adjust on the fly. And there are some pieces it just doesn't quite get after. And that's why you got to have the human intervention. So the question is, if I look at my process from all the way from collecting big data to bring the metadata into the end product, a user-friendly product there, what did I insert the human into this process? And that's what we're going to learn now with AI, is at some point you got to have the human intervention at somewhere, because the wisdom is this, you can't match. It's immeasurable, the value it brings. It will always bring that value. I recall when I was going through surface warfare officer department head course, it's my second tier of leadership in the Navy. When I stepped into the department head class, the captain of the surface warfare officer school, on day one, he addressed us and he said, you know, we get into a new era with all this nice equipment in the Navy, but you guys need to know the basics, the fundamentals. This will never be an analog world, and it will never become a completely digital world. So understand your fundamental, skills, operations, what have you. And I was one of the most profound assertions I've heard, and I still keep it, fresh in my mind today as I see the evolution of technology.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And there seem to be these sort of moments with AI where either people say it's going to be decades before it can do some of the things it's already doing. And some, on the other hand, people put too much faith in it. Like if you hand your marketing over to ChatGPT, you're going to end up with horribly written stuff that also looks like it was written by ChatGPT most of the time, right? And there are better writing tools out there. It's not the best. Perplexity.ai is a bit better. And I've used Claude and, a couple of other things. But it never comes out with something that is absolutely on point. It's normally close. I mean, it's like a sort of pretty mediocre, untrained person, but it never really kind of quite gets the nuances, isn't it, somehow? And yeah, you're talking about AI then. So question to you then, you're basically kind of saying we need to insert the human. Let's flip that on its head though. Can AI increase productivity at all? Or is it just a red herring? And if it can, how do we use it?
Oh, it absolutely can. My conviction is what is AI technology? I see it as a multiplier, not an enabler. I say you got to look at, the basic, I think, human intervention. It goes back to the data collection analysis plan, determine objectives, saying what problems you want to get after, what input goes into systems and what have you. The human you have to inform that. But the difference with AI and with all the value this tool offers is you just not long gonna have human input at the beginning. You're gonna have to, I call it, as you iterate, go through the process here, you're going to have a little human intervention here, do some analytics and AI there. And then you got to take some of the pieces you get from AI and then push it, the human back in and analyze what does this really mean. It's like if you take a resume, I feel that companies shouldn't take resumes and completely just go buzzword to determine who they're going to hire. I think they should use those resumes as somewhat of an indicator, but they should never forego talking to those, you know, the people, you know, that actually they're looking at. And I think, and you talk with people, and a difference is what I spend 30 minutes in this conversation or what I spend 5 minutes in the conversation. That's the gap between what AI offers there. So I feel we have to use it as a multiplier, vice, and enabler.
Okay, so let's dig into that concept, because you've used that phrase a couple of times. So can you just be, you know, tell us exactly what I mean by multipliers versus enablers? I have a rough idea, but let's make sure that I'm really understanding.
Okay. I'll give you a Navy example. I just love my Navy examples. I was a damage control officer on a cruiser back in 93, 94, and it was 97. I was on the destroyer. I was actually the engineer officer, which was the damage control officer as a collateral. And we came up with these digital plots for damage control efforts that could model the ship. And we just put certain information in to determine, you know, damage and casualty. We can track all of it. The other process was we use messengers and humans that will send investigators out, and they will send information back to different phone systems and determine, you know, the damages and actually combat, you know, any casualties. But I felt, and I still do today, even with a lot of software, is that I said, I'm going to still stick my basic fundamental practices of, you know, the human working this process, because I always felt like the human is primary. That's my enabler, but I'm going to not forego technology. I'm going to use it in order to multiply my effort to make things a little more accurate, get, you know, different, you know, data points and get to quicker decisions. So I didn't use it as my primary means of, you know, combating battle damage, but I use it in order to help with my decision to get more data points out there because of the capabilities of the system. So that's what I mean when I say the difference between, and I always say, you know, in a lot of applications, technology is a multiplier, not an enabler. Same thing with unmanned aircrafts. We can do drones or what have you, but we still have fighter jets out there with the human involved there. So I think drones and whatever unmanned systems can make, you know, those pilots better at their jobs, but I wouldn't want to feel like it was vice versa. So that was,
yeah,
envision that concept.
So I guess an enabler, in your term, sounds to me like a decision maker, versus a multiplier is a thing that makes things faster or enables you to draw on more data. Is that roughly right?
Yeah, I guess you would say that. Not just, I would say the decision maker, or it's just, say if I want to get from point A to point B, you know, I mean, in my car, how do I really do that? I have to, the key is what makes that car move, you know, that the tools that get me from here to there is what enables that movement. And then all the other nice stuff in there that I can, me driving as a person, seeing things that I'm enabling that car to move, you know, but what all the other technical stuff that's tied into it, then I can get all the systems that surrounds me. It's going to help me navigate to those locations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So the enabler is kind of the driver, as it were. They're in the driving seat, literally. Okay. Which what makes you want to go down a rabbit hole around driverless cars, but then that's not really relative to e-commerce. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first, a former naval captain talking about e-commerce. Interesting perspective, I think. So to do today, two things I think really come out of it. First of all, is the size of the problem, the human saturation problem. And then one of the other things, as Dr. Simmons put it, the drumbeat that goes behind everything else is the necessity to having a really, really clear objective before you start pulling together, let alone diving into all of this data, because that clarifies everything, really. The idea of multipliers versus enablers. So the idea of multipliers is really using AI or other different data tools, and enablers is making decisions, which is the human element. The other thing is then the problem that we talked about is decision paralysis by data. So sometimes, you know, just simply not making a decision because you are overwhelmed. And so the general saturation of the human brain by the machines and the decision paralysis are the big problems. So that's what we've outlined today. You'll be glad to hear that we're not going to leave you with the problems. We'll be outlining the solutions in the next episode of the podcast, where we continue that interview with Dr. Simmons. In the meantime, if you feel that having a forum in which to discuss problems like this and bash them around to come to some practical solution is helpful to you, then I would suggest you check out the 10K Collective Mastermind, going into its, I think, seventh year now, and a place where we find it's very, very helpful to make sense of the data overwhelm, some human input and human discussion. Anyway, that's for later. For now, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode where we talk about the solutions to the problems. And as ever, happy hunting. Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit and book in a time, and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you on a call soon. Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast for six and seven figure Amazon sellers. I really hope you found the show helpful to you. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a quick star rating. It will take you all of 30 seconds to do it, but it does mean we can be found by and help many more e-commerce business builders. I wish you fast and profitable scaling, and I hope you enjoy the process of building your seven-figure Amazon business. Thanks very much for listening.